ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
We've found the keys, so let's go.
Motor Talk with Toby Hagen.
Toby, good evening to you.
G'day, Phil.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Where have you been driving this week?
I have been driving in Australia, mainly around Sydney. So, it's, okay. But yeah, I haven't been. It hasn't been too exciting from a driving perspective. That said, I did drive to Canberra today, and then flew to Melbourne. So I've been driving in three states, territories okay. today.
Alrighty. And now, vehicle sales figures, sales figures are out. The winners are China One.
Yeah, China's certainly growing. I mean, it's about to overtake Thailand as the second biggest supplier of vehicles to Australia. So obviously Japan being number one, Thailand number two, given the amount of utes that come out of Thailand, and China fast growing, heading up towards, I don't think it's going to be too long. A year, two, three, until China's number one. That's the way it's sort of heading. And you look at the numbers and the winners of the October sales figures. Chery, for example, up 145%. BYD up 129%. GWM up 32%. And then, interestingly, all the German luxury brands, Audi, Mercedes, and BMW, also had pretty strong months. So they're all heading in one direction. And, you know, when you're looking at more than doubling of sales for some of those big brands, it's a pretty big result.
Mm. Yeah, there'd been a bit of a dip in EV sales, but that's not the case anymore. EV sales back up nearly 50%.
Yeah, for the month, up 50%. Certainly a relatively strong month. That said, Tesla was down about 29%. And, you know, I guess this is a theme we've been seeing in terms of, you know, Tesla was dominant in that EV space and has been coming off. But it was also the start of a new quarter, October, which Tesla is typically strong at the end of the quarter. So I'd expect some stronger results in November and certainly December than now for that. But yeah, EV sales, you know, they're not where people thought they would be. A couple of years ago, there was an expectation they'd be higher than where they are now, you know, hovering around that 9 or 10% of overall sales. But hybrids are the ones that had a big jump in October, up 25%. So hybrids are more than double what EV sales are. And plug-in hybrids almost doubled, but we still buy more EVs than we do plug-in hybrids. But plug-in hybrids is where a lot of the growth is now, because manufacturers are seeing that that is a great way to tick this box in terms of lowering CO2 emissions according to the windscreen sticker, the government sticker that that they have to put on the windscreen with the fuel use figures. Plug-in hybrids perform extremely well on those. So it's a pretty appealing technology now that we've got these CO2 emissions regulations.
Petrol sales are down, but diesel sales are up.
Yeah, that's right. Diesel sales only up a little bit, 4%, or 3.9%, but it's still relatively strong. But yeah, as you say, petrol sales of pure petrol vehicles down. But keep in mind, we've just talked about the hybrids and the plug-in hybrids growing, and that's where a lot of that is shifting to. Toyota, for example, on a bunch of its popular models these days, is hybrid only. So, that in itself will take some sales out of the pure petrol sales and put them into the hybrid basket instead. So I'd expect that trend to continue. And look, it'll be interesting longer term. I tend to think diesel will also come off over the next 5 or 10 years. Because you look at what's happening, I guess diesel's been the preferred fuel in large SUVs and utes. And we're starting to see plug-in hybrid utes. And, in a lot of ways, they're doing pretty much exactly what a diesel engine does in terms of decent torque. They are actually, in another way, providing better performance than the diesels. And can use a lot less fuel, and if you want to, you can run them on electricity for shorter trips. So as I said, I think we'll start to see diesel at some point come off, but at the moment it's extremely strong.
Yep. Okay. All right. And Australia's most popular utes, Ford's announced that it's going to drop the 4-cylinder bi-turbo engine out of the Ranger.
Yeah, that's right. So there's four drivetrains available in that car now. The single turbo 4-cylinder diesel, the twin turbo or bi-turbo as they market it, four-cylinder diesel, and then they've got the plug-in hybrid petrol version and the V6 turbo diesel. And yeah, the four-cylinder bi-turbo was sort of the, that was the sweet spot. That was the one that sort of sold in the biggest numbers. And they're now discontinuing that. So instead, they're going to replace that with the single turbo engine. They're saying they're upgrading that. They haven't released figures yet, but if you look at it now, it's significantly down in terms of power and torque over the bi-turbo version. As I said, they're going to upgrade a little bit and fit it with the 10-speed automatic, but no word yet on, I guess, how much power and torque we're going to drop from the 154 kilowatts and 500 newton metres that the bi-turbo engine produces today. So yeah, that'll be an interesting shake-up in that segment.
And the new Hilux going to be revealed in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I think it's the 10th of November. They're showing that off and the media's driven it, so there's a lot of expectation there as to, you know, what that car's going to be like. A lot of interest in it, obviously. It's, you know, until the last few years, it was the top-selling, not only ute in the country, but the top-selling vehicle in the country. So there's a lot of anticipation about this. In some parts of the country, you know, far north Queensland, the top end generally is that is the default for a lot of people up there. And reliability and so on is something that that Hilux really owns, that the reputation for that in that market, in that ute segment. So a lot of expectation around this car, and there's been a lot of leaks in terms of images and details and so on. One of the interesting things I saw, the instrument cluster, at least on some models, is an analog instrument cluster, whereas these days almost every new car that comes out, even the entry-level cheapies, tend to have a digital instrument cluster. So I'm wondering whether Toyota's doing that for, I guess, that sort of simplicity and reliability that people in the bush often ask for. So that'll be an interesting one. There's also some news came out of, a little slide was shown and leaked online about the model mix, and it looks like they've got an EV version coming as well, which is, the suggestion is it'll be here in 2026 next year. Will it come to Australia? That's the big question, but I can't imagine why it wouldn't. Australia's a huge market for the Hilux, and if you look at what Toyota's been doing with that car and I guess the interest levels in electric, not so much from, you know, your farmers and adventurers, but from mining fleets, and mining fleets are a huge part of the market, and they've been demanding electric vehicles, and to have something like that out on those big mines, I think it'd be pretty interesting.
Yes, all right, let's go to calls. 1-300-800-222 is the number if you'd like to grab a line. Linda's on the line from Petersham. G'day, Linda.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Pretty good.
I'm looking at buying a new second-hand car in the next 12 months or so, but I'm wary of all second-hand car salesmen and all of that. Maybe it's because I'm a lady of a certain age. So is this such a thing as a buyer's agent, like you could get for, you know, when you buy a house or other things? Do they have those in the car industry?
There are more so car brokers and so on for new cars. There's certainly a lot of that going around. Obviously, new cars are very different to used in terms of, you know, you're not going to have issues. But really, the best way is just to get an independent inspection. So there's various places that do that, including Redbook. So it'll cost you, I can't remember off the top of my head, $300, something like that, to get an independent inspection done. And they'll go through it and they'll pick things like, you know, whether it's had major crash damage repairs. They'll always find something. Every time I've seen them do an inspection on a car, and I've sold cars and had people get inspections done on the cars I'm selling, and I know they're fine, and they'll always pick little things. They'll say, oh, there's a little scratch here, and the tire wear's a bit different here, and all this sort of stuff. So they'll pick up something, but that would be that'd be what I'd recommend is, you know, go figure out the car, the type of car you want, obviously.
Yeah, I know what I want to get, but I've got mobility issues, and I'm just not feeling confident going into a
car yard and so on.
That's all, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing you'll find is often the big dealers, so the ones that are associated with the big brands, they'll often have their own sort of rules and regulations about the sort of cars they'll deal with. So they won't necessarily deal in those cars that have had major crash damage and so on. They'll they'll sort of filter them off and sell them out to wholesalers or sell them off to the smaller yards. So going with one of those big dealers is probably some sort of an insurance policy. But as I said, I would also be going for just getting an independent inspection. So do your research online, figure out the exact model you want, call a dealer and have a chat to them and say, do you know if it's got this, this and this? ask them all the basics about, you know, can I see the service books? Can I see the, you know, what sort of condition are the tyres in? Go through all the real basics and get answers from them, and then say, okay, if everything you're telling me is right, I'd like to get an independent inspection done and you know, negotiate on price and hopefully end up with a car that'll be okay.
Okay.
All right,
Linda. Good luck. Good luck. Thank you. 1-300-800-222. Karen is from South Brizzy. G'day, Karen.
Oh, hi, guys. Good evening. I just wanted to get some advice. I'm looking to buy a vehicle around 20K, and I've been driving a Toyota Yaris Vitz recently, which I've really enjoyed driving. It's a hybrid, and I'm just wondering, should I go kind of that way? Should I go a Corolla? I'm also looking at Hondas or Mazdas, just a top-line kind of idea, second-hand car, obviously.
Mm. So your Yaris, is it a private import, is it?
It's a Vitz, V-I-T-Z. It's a car that I've just been hiring.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, right, because Vitz they used in Japan. I didn't remember them using that that nameplate here. I thought it might have been a private import. But so you're wondering whether to step up in terms of size-wise to go to a Corolla or something, yeah?
Well, I'm hiring that car, so I'm going to purchase one, and right. I'm just wondering... So I've seen another Vitz for about 16.5 on the carsales.com thing.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So
the mechanic to help me.
Yep. Well, it's a good way to start. Someone who knows what they're looking at and can try and, you know, direct you down a certain path and so on. So yeah, look, certainly a Yaris is a good place to start, and that's you know, I guess that's fairly solid buying in that market. But don't ignore some of the alternatives. Obviously, if you want a hybrid, I guess looking at second hand. Toyota's going to be pretty heavy in the mix because they've been in the market longest and have by far the most used hybrids on the market. I think they hit 500,000 sales or something last year, I think it was, somewhere around that. So they've got there's plenty to choose from. If you don't want to go hybrid, you know, things like a Mazda 2 or a Kia Seltos would also be worth sticking on the list. And I'm trying to think where else hybrid-wise around about that $20,000 mark, you know, you can look at things, some of the MGs and so on, but some of the older ones aren't really, I wouldn't really stick on the short list. No. So, yeah, I mean, something like that would work well. You know, you mentioned a Honda Jazz before. Honda Jazz is also great buying. They didn't do a hybrid version of that in Australia, but it's also good to look at. But stepping up in size, once you then step up to the next size up, you get more options. Sorry, go ahead.
I beg your pardon, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'll be doing a lot of driving for my work. A fair bit. Brisbane, Gold Coast, Brisbane, Northern Rivers, and for, so I'm just kind of looking at that as well, trying to weigh out.
Sure.
But also something that's easy to park and just get around, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you'll find the Yaris is a city car or a small, very small hatchback. Once you step up to the next size up, so your Toyota Corollas and Mazda 3s and so on, it's amazing how much of a step up you get, not just in a little bit of space, more so in the back seat and the boot, but also in terms of refinement and attention to detail. They sort of feel like a class up in terms of you know, just stepping into a, I wouldn't say a luxury vehicle, but a bit more upmarket vehicle than those basic cars. And particularly, as I said, with things like road noise and refinement, it'll just be a little bit of a step up on that as well. So it'll be, if you can stretch the budget, given you're doing some Ks, not so much stretch the budget, you'd probably have to go to a slightly older model, a year or two older, for example. But that'd open you up to some more options there.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. Good luck. 1-300-800-222. Peter from Kensington in WA. G'day, Pete. Hi, Pete.
Yeah, g'day. Hey, how you doing? The Zeca 7X, I've heard you speak of that before, but hadn't driven it. Just wondering if you've had a chance to drive it and if you've got any thoughts.
Yeah, I've driven it. I've only driven it in China, not in Australia yet. I'll be getting into one soon, hopefully. But, in terms of that mid-sized electric SUV segment, you know, I've obviously talked about Tesla Model Y quite extensively, and that is, in a lot of ways, still the benchmark in that class. So it's worth, I guess, considering that at least if you're in that category. But the 7X is certainly at the pointy end as well. I've talked also about the XPeng G6, which is also good buying in that end of the market. But that 7X, in terms of value, so the features and so on you get for the money, and it's basically bang on Tesla money for the entry-level car. So in terms of the features and so on, it's excellent. It's also one of the better ones to drive. So they've done a bit more work with things like suspension tuning to sharpen it up a bit from some of the other options in that segment. So so yeah, as I said, my drive in China was very impressive of it. It did a good job.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, lovely. No, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. Bye-bye. Obviously interested. 1-300-800-222. Gina in Perth. G'day, Gina.
Oh, g'day. How are you going?
Pretty good.
I've got an old, beautiful old 2008 Toyota Camry Grande. It's only done 100,000 Ks. Goes like a dream. But I know that at some point, you know, I'm going to have to get rid of it and change up to a hybrid. But I think when I looked at the equivalent of a Camry Grande in the hybrid, it was about 60,000. Is that about right?
Sounds about right.
Okay. Is that going to eventually come down, do you think, or is that just what the market is? Because I need to sell it, but I don't really want to sell this car. It goes so beautifully, but
I mean that's one of the annoying things with old Camrys is they fail to die, so people end up driving them for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah,
it's a good problem to have, I guess.
It's like the Corolla, yes. or the Datsun 180B. I mean, they never die.
Probably, yeah. It's got walnut and electric leather seats, and you know, it's a beautiful car.
It's excellent.
But, yeah.
So, look, if you look at...
It's a dilemma.
if you look at what Toyota does generally with its models, and we'll see this, I think, very soon with the new Hilux that's coming out, is they'll bring out a new generation car and they step the prices up, you know, 2, 3, 5%, whatever it might be, which then makes... it actually does an awesome job of looking after the residual values of those older ones, because suddenly to get into a newer one, it costs you a fair bit more. So it keeps people who are buying the old ones happy, and obviously, or who own the old ones, it keeps them a bit happy, but also sort of puts a premium on the new one and says, hey, we've come out with this new car. So I would not expect that Camry to come down at all from where it is now. I think it's going to be, if anything, it'll go in the other direction. I think there will be one exception to that in the Toyota lineup, and that will be the BZ4X. So there's an update to that car coming, similar with the Subaru Solterra. And Subaru's just announced a price drop of around about 10% on that car, and I would imagine Toyota will probably follow suit. But yeah, look, to answer your question, I think the Camry will, as I said, stay around that price. But the one thing I would say is I hear what you're saying, leather and wood trim and all that sort of stuff. If you look at what's in even the base model of the new Camry, you'll find it's got a heck of a lot more gear than your one. Okay, maybe not those luxury features like leather and so on, but all the other trinkets and so on, it'll have a lot more than what your car's got. And once you step up
to... it's a reliability, to be honest. It's just nothing goes wrong.
Yeah. No, that's right. It's they've got a very good reputation for that. So, look, that market's an interesting one. That mid-size sedan market, you know, I guess... almost large sedan to some extent, and we previously had Holden Commodores and Ford Falcons, which are now gone. We also had things like Subaru Liberties and a Honda Accord. We've still got a Honda Accord, but it's now a very premium offering that they don't sell many of. And, you know, we had Ford Mondeos, they've all gone. So a lot of those cars have dropped off, but interestingly, you've seen electric now start to revive that segment a bit with the Tesla Model 3, BYD Seal. Mazda next year has the 6e coming, which is... essentially an electric version of the Mazda 6. It's an all-new car, but where they will position it will be roughly where the Mazda 6 used to sit. So it's there's a lot happening on the electric space there too.
I understand where you're at.
The hybrid, hybrid the best way to go though, do you think still? Or
you mean in a Camry or generally?
Well, in a Camry, but even generally, like...
So in a Camry, you don't have a choice because that's all they've got. Definitely the way to go in a Camry.
I'm calling you.
It is a very good drivetrain in that car, but I'd also say for a lot of people, an electric will do as good a job or better, because in the electrics you're going to get better performance, you'll obviously get lower running costs, better servicing costs and all that sort of stuff. So there's there are advantages for going electric. I'm not suggesting everyone should go electric, because some people won't be ready for it yet and they might not have home charging and all that sort of stuff. But if you can tick a few boxes, it'd certainly be worth considering. But of the petrol or hybrid versions, yeah, the Camry is an excellent choice at the moment.
All right. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you. Thanks, Gina. 1-300-800-222. Here's a question on the text line. Where are I now? I lost it.
I'm ready for it.
Here we go. Yeah. Tracy from Somerton Park in South Australia says, I just bought a Mazda 2-litre petrol. Can you give me your opinion on whether the switch on or off that takes place when you stop at lights really makes much difference to fuel economy? If it doesn't, I'd like to turn it off. But I'd like to understand this better. Does it make much difference to fuel economy or not?
So it totally depends how you drive the car. Obviously, right. If you're sitting on a freeway, it's not going to make any difference at all, because the engine's going to be running just the same as it was. But in stop-start traffic, if you're in really thick peak hour traffic, it will absolutely make a difference. It will depend on the car, obviously, of how much of a difference and, as I said, how often the car is having to shut down. And what you also notice with those systems is, let's say it's a hot day and you've got the air conditioning cranking, then the engine won't switch off for as long. And sometimes in some cars, it won't switch off at all if you've got the air conditioning fired right up. So all those factors come into it. But the short story is, yes, it does make a difference.
Much of a difference?
Oh, it can make a few percent. Right. But if you look at what car makers do to try and reduce fuel use, they're under intense pressure to reduce fuel use and CO2 emissions, originally for places like America and Europe, now obviously for Australia, now that we've got these CO2 emissions regulations in place. And they'll work incredibly hard to save weight, you know, to save a few grams here and there, which again will make the tiniest effect. But the way the engineers look at it is they say, okay, if we can shave a tiny bit off there, a tiny bit off over there, and a tiny bit off with the stop-start system, then suddenly we've saved 0.1, 0.2 a litre, 0.2 litres 100 according to the official sticker. So some cars actually will also have a system in the dash, Audis and so on. Some other ones have a system where they'll tell you exactly how much fuel it's saving. So they'll come up and it'll say, you know, we've saved on this trip, it's saved 0.3 of a litre or something like that. And it'll give you the exact measurement of what it's saving by shutting the car down. But it's usually pretty small. But the reason that all cars that have those systems default to on. Every time you start the car, it will default to having the stop-start system activated. But you can switch them off as well. But the reason they default is so that they in that default mode, they're hitting the fuel figure that's claimed on the car, basically.
All
Or trying to.
All right, Paul from Lambie Heights. Sorry, Paul, you've been waiting on there. Hello.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Toby. How you going?
Good.
Look, I want to eventually get into the EV club, and I actually went to the EV show in Sydney last weekend, and, you know, it was interesting. A lot of the big manufacturers were conspicuously absent, but there was still a pretty good cross-section there, and, you know, I think a lot of them, the styling, a lot of them is fairly bland, but I like the styling of the Zeekr. You know, they had the X and I think the 7X that we heard about before. Mm-hmm. What I've read about the X is that it's a nice car. It looks good. It's luxurious and, you know, quite powerful. But the shortcomings that I've heard were A, the overactive safety systems, and B, the glass roof doesn't have a shade, so it gets very, very hot in the summer. Mm. I'm just wondering whether you've driven that and what your thoughts about it are.
I have the Zeekr X, yeah, absolutely. And the sunshade in summer is an issue not just with that car. It's an issue with all Teslas, with a lot of Polestars. There's a whole bunch of cars that don't have, you know, a cover automatically there. But if you go looking online, everyone will, and the manufacturers, Tesla and Polestar, for example, sell shades. So basically you can just, they've got like little suction cups or clips that you clip on and it'll cover it up for you. So there's, and they're pretty inexpensive, $200 or $300, something like that. So it's a way that a lot of people get around it, is just buy those aftermarket, either from the factory or aftermarket shades to clip them in there. Yeah. Yes, they can be an issue on a hot day. They're not as bad. I don't find them as annoying as some people, but I've certainly had people in the car saying, you know, that's a pain on a stinking hot day. So it's not great in that regard. In terms of the assist systems on that car, so yes, there's actually some other brands that are far worse than that. So some of the Chinese brands in particular that are far worse than Zeekr. And part of what Zeekr, Zeekr is owned by Geely, and Geely also owns Volvo, Polestar, Lotus, and various other brands. So they've got a bit of that. They can tap into that expertise there from a brand like Volvo, for example, and try to tweak the systems and I guess make sure they're not too overbearing. So I never found them as bad, as I said, as some of the other ones. That said, almost every car on the market these days I don't think is perfect. I think they've all got some work to do in terms of particularly the lane keeping assist systems and steering assist. They can be a little bit frustrating sometimes, but I didn't find them, as I said, as bad. And the car itself is pretty cool. When it first arrived, that Zeekr X, it was too expensive, but they adjusted the prices and sharpened things up a bit, so it's now looking a little bit better for sure. But if you're looking at that car, it's also worth looking at a Volvo EX30, which is beneath the skin, basically the same thing, albeit a bit more expensive. So
I had a drive of that this week, actually.
What do you think, Phil?
I thought it was pretty good. Nice. I mean, for a town car, it's hard to think what else you'd want in a way. Like they're very easy to drive.
Sure are.
What's that?
They're not cheap, though, are they?
No. That's the one thing I do like about that Volvo, though, is some of the colours and so on are pretty funky, but they also give you a choice of interior themes in terms of the materials and finishes and so on. And often in the premium brands, when you get that choice, it's suddenly, you know, oh, that's an extra X thousand dollars to get into that one. But with the Volvo, it's the same price across all of them. So you whichever one you choose interior theme, it's all the same price. So that's I don't mind that.
On the longevity and the reliability of the Volvo, I've heard conflicting reports about those.
Well, it should be exactly the same as the Zeekr. So it's as I said, all everything, the batteries and electric motor and everything are all the same thing. So look, you know, electric cars, there was a study out of the UK 6-odd months ago that said that that EVs are now lasting longer than petrol and diesel cars. So I would expect something similar. And look, it's the battery pack's one of the big things you've got to look at, but batteries degrade over time, but equally they're lasting. The degradation, experts I've spoken to suggest the degradation is somewhere around 1 to 1.5% of the original capacity for each year. So, you know, after 10 years, you might have lost 10 or 15% of the original capacity. So, it's not the end of the world. And you know, think about what your average petrol car is going to look like after 10 years and maybe a couple hundred thousand Ks, and that'll also have some degradation and things going wrong as well.
Oh, I polish it every weekend. I have no idea what you're talking about. All right. Thanks for that, Paul. I appreciate it. 1-300-800-222 is the number, if you like to call. This is an edition of Motor Talk. How about this? Joe says, just speaking of attention to your car, Toby, my nephew has a Tesla. He hardly drives and it's currently parked and the battery's flat. He washed it today with his mum using the old-fashioned bucket and sponge method. Now, there's a bonding exercise.
I washed a car with a bucket and sponge 3 days ago, I think it was. So
hey, there you go.
That's how I always wash my cars.
Yeah, all right. If you've got the facilities, why not? Cecilia's in Alice Springs. G'day, Cecilia.
Yeah, hi. Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I've been waiting to get on this program, actually, because we're going to buy a new car. Mm-hmm. And my partner drives to the AP Wylands every shift. He does a couple of weeks on and then a week off.
Yep.
And we're looking between an Isuzu and a Hilux, and there's a reasonable price difference. And we're just wondering the value for money there, and whether the Isuzu, being we understand is cheaper, whether that's the way to go. And we do regularly do four-wheel driving and go to Adelaide. So, it's a ute we're after with four doors and a diesel.
Toyota, some people call it the Toyota tax. You generally, particularly with their large four-wheel drives, you'll often pay more for them. And it's amazing that current Hilux, anytime we'll do a test with one and do a comparison test with one, for example, it usually doesn't go particularly well, mainly on price. But if you the counter to that is they hold their value incredibly well. So you tend to get a fair chunk of that price premium back once you go to sell the car. So so I'd say keep that in mind when you go to sell it, is you're a fair chance to get it back. But as I said earlier, there is a new Hilux coming. I think it's in 4 days. They're releasing some details on it. And I think I'd want to see that and understand a little bit more about where they're going with it before diving into the current Hilux at the moment. Because the current Hilux, as I said, it's starting to feel tired. It's a fraction smaller in the body than a lot of its rivals, and I think the new one's going to step up in size a little bit. And, yeah, it's just, as I said, starting to show its age a bit. So, but that said, it's still, in terms of reliability, it has the reputation in that segment, and off-road ability is absolutely excellent in that car. I've done some amazing things in Hiluxes, and they're incredible in terms of once you get them. Basically, the rougher the road, the tougher the terrain, the better they perform. That's when they really start to step up. So it's so I guess some of those things on road start to fall away a bit once you get it off road. So
can I just ask, the Isuzu, do you rate it or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Isuzu is still solid buying, and it's it's got a great reputation in a lot of ways. If you're looking at the Isuzu, you should also look at a Mazda BT50. They're the same car. They come out of the same factory, and really the biggest difference is the badge. So it's well worth having a look at that too, and just lining them up on value and saying, okay, which one has, you know, which one's less the lowest price and the better level of features, basically. So definitely look at a Mazda as well. And as I said, I'd be waiting at least 4 days to see what that new Hilux looks like to just learn a little bit more about it.
So just the final question, do you think it's worth paying that extra premium for the Hilux label on reliability and mechanics compared to the others?
It's a tough question. I would say probably yes, but in the way you're going to use the car, as I said, doing that off-road and doing some decent driving and so on, I'd say it might be worth the up worth paying a little bit more for. And as I said, having that I guess not quite a guarantee, but the closest thing to it, that it'll still probably be worth a fair bit, you know, when you go to sell it in 3 years, 5 years, whenever that might be.
Okay,
thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Cecil. Thank you. Cecilia in Alice Springs, this is Motor Talk. You're on ABC Radio.
Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Radio.
I love this one. This is Jen, says, can you kindly ask your motorman, do they still make VW Beetles? If not, is it a good idea to buy a second-hand one? I've had two over the years, and I've got a Golf now, but, gee, I miss my Beetle. Well, they did. I don't think they make
them. They did. They don't now. So they bought it back around 2000, and then I'm trying to think, it disappeared 5 years ago, something like that.
That's right.
So they had two generations in that time. So it's
that came back wasn't anything like the original, though.
No, it wasn't, and it's because it was effectively a Beetle. It was effectively a Volkswagen Golf made to look like a Beetle. So whereas those original Beetles, the one that everyone remembers from decades ago,
and loved,
they had the engine in the back, and you had that nice big boot under the bonnet,
yep,
or storage space under the bonnet. So
noisy as buggery.
Yeah. So those cars, I guess, they were built a certain way for a certain purpose, and their big appeal, obviously, was affordability. So, yeah. And reliability and all that sort of stuff. So the modern Beetles never had any of that, and they were hugely compromised in that you had the engine under the bonnet, so, and then you had a fairly small luggage area in the boot where the engine would have been in the old one. So it was really a styling exercise, and they also had a premium price tag on it and all that sort of stuff. So I would say, is it worth buying one of those new old ones, like one of the ones from the last 20-odd years? I would only do it if you like the look of it, because you're going to get a better, more practical car in the Golf. And there's also other options out there. So it really is, basically how much do you love the look of it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Bill. Sorry, Bill, you've been hanging on there. Appreciate it. Sorry, we've had a fair bit of interest tonight for Toby, as usual. G'day, Bill.
Hi. I'm looking at the MG4. And just as a general question, what does Toby think of them?
It's a pretty cool car. So it was a much cooler car a bit over a year ago when it was $31,990 drive away. These days it's about, I think, $37,000 drive away. So it's exactly the same car. It's just got more expensive. but it was terrific buying at $31,990. It's still decent buying, but it's also got a lot more competition that's arrived in the market and is arriving in the market over the next 6 or so months. So yeah, still pretty solid. And the best bits are it's a great car to drive. It's it's pretty fun. It's actually quite well packaged, so the space and so on inside the cabin's pretty good. The downsides, the tech, I find the screen can sometimes be a little laggy. So when you go to press a button or something, it can sometimes take, a second, by which time you've repressed it and then you've double pressed it. So it gets a bit frustrating. So little things like that. So some of that infotainment system stuff can be a minor frustration, but the car itself is pretty solid.
Okay, I was looking specifically at either the Essence 64 or the Long Range 77, realizing they have slightly longer range in the 77 and a nickel-based battery. What's the difference between the two batteries?
So your entry-level battery is LFP or lithium ferrous phosphate. And the difference between the two, so that NMC or nickel manganese cobalt, the NMC batteries have a higher energy density. So basically you can pack more electricity into a slightly smaller battery pack. So generally what you find is the longer range batteries, and Tesla does the same thing on the Tesla long range and performance models. They use the NMC chemistry. On the entry-level rear-wheel drive cars, they use LFP chemistry. So it's all to do with range, basically. There is a slight thing with longevity. The expectation is that LFP batteries will last longer. But when I say last longer, like the LFP batteries, the numbers I've seen thrown around are maybe they'll do 10,000 cycles or something, which will get you into millions of kilometres, and obviously the rest of the car will be falling apart around it by that stage, whereas an NMC battery is sort of usually around about 3,000 cycles, but even that's still going to get you a fair few Ks. Like, again, it should outlast other parts of the car. So, and LFP batteries are also less susceptible to... NMC batteries, you often get a recommendation not to charge them to 100% all the time. So basically charge them to 80 or 90% for your daily driving, and before a long road trip, charge them up to 100%, whereas an LFP battery, they just say pop them up to 100 each time. Mm.
Can you just leave them plugged in the garage or something like that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something, I guess... some of the cheaper e-scooters and e-bikes and so on have given lithium-ion batteries a bad name, partly because in some of them, there are a lot of terrific e-scooters and e-bikes that have got great batteries, but there are some cheaper ones that don't have good batteries, have relatively cheap cells and so on in them, and also don't have a proper battery management system. And it's the battery management system that's crucial there. In a car, once the car gets to 100%, it shuts down the charge. It stops taking on electricity. Whereas in some of those cheaper electronics, they'll just keep piling it in, and eventually the thing gets too hot and catches fire. And we've seen the stories in the news about all those fires and so on. But no, with an electric car, you can leave it plugged in for weeks if you want. You just leave the thing plugged in, and it'll all be fine. The battery management system will have shut things down and be monitoring everything from cell voltage to cell temperature and so on. So it's all fine to do that.
All right, we'll leave it there, Bill. Thank you. Appreciate the call, 1-300-800-222 on the text line. When's a decent fully electric ute coming? A lot of country people, people have a lot of solar to recharge.
Yeah, I know. And look, as I said, I think in the next year or two we'll start seeing some fully electric utes. We've obviously had one. We had one a few years ago, but it was well off the pace.
Is Hilux going to...
That's the thing. I think with Hilux we'll see something. And others, well, Isuzu, for example, has got one coming out. But if you look at the Isuzu, it's fairly short range. I don't know. I think it was 350 Ks or something. And it's looking like being pretty expensive. And some of the Chinese ones, they're sort of bubbling away in the background. You know, MG U9 and so on are looking at some electric versions of those. So we'll see things. Will we see one that can tow 3.5 tonnes and cover the sorts of distances that people will expect of a ute?
Out of a diesel ute, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably not in the next 2 or 3 years. I think that's probably more end of the decade sort of thing. But as I said, I think in the next 18 months or so, we'll start to see some electric utes. The big question will be price and range.
Yeah. Yeah, you're particularly right about towing, that's true. All righty, Ruth from Sunnybank Hills. Hey, Ruth.
Hello, good evening. Just very quickly, I was driving past an EV vehicle the other day and it had a badge on it I didn't recognise, and I just thought Toby might be able to help us or anybody out there. It's a dot, two right slashes and a dot. There was no, I have no idea. I tried Google, I tried a couple of friends, we have no idea.
Yeah, I was trying to think Geely, but Geely's like six boxes. It might be IM by MG. Is so it sort of looks like a stylized, almost like a stylized IM logo type of IM.
Thing. IM, okay.
So
look it up.
I would think it's probably IM is what you're talking about. So it's sort of a sub brand of MG. So it's
Oh right. Okay.
So yeah, it was like two slashes, diagonal slashes, and a dot in each corner. Yeah.
And a dot on each side. Yes,
yeah. That's that's IM. Yeah. So yeah, it's
great. Thank you so much.
So it's part of
no worries, Ruth.
Yeah, so it's part of MG. So it's it's sort of their premium prestige brand. But in Australia, they actually put the MG badge on the back of the MG. It says something like IM by MG or by MG Motor or something on the back. So it's got that on there too. But yeah,
Bernie in Gippsland. Hi, Bernie.
Thank you for taking my call. Looking at buying our last ever car.
Yep. Your last ever.
Well, come on, I'm 76.
Oh, come on, Bernie. You got at least two or three left in.
Be optimistic.
Come on, Bernie.
Just had a knee replacement, so I have to go.
Makes no difference. Come on, Bernie. Come on, Bernie.
Now, the question is the Geely EV5. Your opinion of it, please.
Which is this, the Kia EV5?
Negative. The Geely? Is it EX5 then? Sorry, it's...
Oh, Geely. Geely EX5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not the gig. Not the giggly, no. The Geely, yeah.
Not a googly ball, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is one of those ones that plays in the value end of the market, sort of, you know, low $40,000 mark, and really sharply priced. One of those ones that you get in and go, wow, everything's presented really well, and it's loaded with tech and all that sort of stuff. So they pack plenty in. It's not quite as some of the assistance systems I find a little bit eager to beep and bong. And it's not quite as sharp to drive in terms of things like the steering doesn't really have that nice sort of planted feel. It's not bad by any stretch, but all I'm saying is there are better cars there, things like a Kia EV3, which is admittedly smaller than that and more expensive than the Geely. But even an MG S5, for example, is pretty sharp sharp buying, or at least worth a look against that Geely. So the Geely's real appeal is the technology, the features, the price. But as I said, the driving's, let's call it a 7 out of 10 for the driving, whereas some of the others are 8 or 9 out of 10.
Hmm.
Well, let's just say I love driving Golf manual that we have. however...
you won't have to shift gears.
I like driving a car, not an automatic. However, there's no such thing as manual.
I know, no. Bernie. These days are gone. It's a bit. It's a bit like the crank handle start. You know, it was fun while it lasted. Well, maybe not.
Been around when that was on Tuesday.
See you, Bernie. I've got faith in you, mate. I got faith. I reckon you're two or three cars out. All right. See you. Okay. Bye bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Hey, how about this, Toby? You reckon that Toyota is going to make a rival to the Rolls-Royce? It's funny, the Rolls-Royce, isn't it? It's still, in many people's eyes, the
pinnacle.
The pinnacle, isn't it?
100%.
Do you reckon it is? Is it the best car in the world?
It's hard. I mean, when you say it's the best car in the world, no. I mean, I find all those top-end cars, it's the law of diminishing returns. Is a million-dollar supercar twice as good as a $500,000 supercar? No, but it's generally a better car. But it's as I said, you know, you're sort of looking at it going, it's the law of diminishing returns. It's just you don't quite get the return on investment.
But people buy the Rolls for the brand, don't they?
100%. But it is, that said, a Rolls Royce, I had one probably 6 or 8 months ago, and it is fairly special. Like when you sit in it and when you see the attention to detail, everything from the carpet, which makes you want to drive around barefoot, it's got that really sort of really nice fluffy carpet on it, to the Starliner roof, and everything just works and it's immaculate in terms of the way it does things, and they're amazingly good to drive, and the refinement, the quality, the ride quality, all that sort of stuff is top shelf. So it is they are incredible cars, but are they worth $1 million? Well, fortunately, I'll never have to figure that one out for myself.
Most of us will never have to worry about that. But Toyota's got one themselves called the Century.
Yeah, so
they're going to sell it in Australia.
Well, they haven't ruled it out for Australia. They haven't said they will do it in Australia. But what they've done is the Century they've sold it for decades in Japan as the Toyota Century. It's been their top shelf car. It's there.
How much do they sell it for?
Oh, I don't know. In Japan, I'm not sure what the price is over there, but it's a big thing in the early 2000s, and for quite a while it had a V12 engine, and then it went to a V8, and now V6 hybrids and so on. So performance-wise, luxury, it was the pinnacle, basically. They aimed it as the pinnacle of the Japanese luxury scene. And now they're saying the recent Tokyo Motor Show, they've spun it out as its own brand, basically. So they did a coupe concept car, and they're now looking to go up against the likes of Rolls-Royce with a top-shelf brand that would be above Lexus. So I guess Toyota, Lexus, Rolls-Royce, Century, which similar to BMW has Rolls, BMW these days owns Rolls-Royce, so it sits well above BMW in terms of the pecking order.
Yep.
So, but it's funny, you look at the brands that have targeted Rolls-Royce over the years, and one of the most recent has been Maybach, which was the top-end offshoot of Mercedes-Benz, and it pretty much flopped. They still have Maybach here, but it's a Mercedes-Benz Maybach instead of its own brand.
Yeah.
So that one really struggled against it. You're looking at where Jaguar's going now, and Jaguar's really, they're talking about stretching the brand up into the hundreds of thousands of dollars and trying to take on the likes of Bentley and so on. It's pretty hard once you're up in that end of the market
because as you
touched on, you don't sell many cars. And as you touched on, it is brand. It's people, no one has to explain anything to someone when you say I drive a Rolls-Royce. Okay, the bloke's loaded and the car's amazing. Off you go. Whereas if you drive something new that they've never heard of, you're having to try and tell them why it's a good car, and it doesn't really work in that end of the market.
There's not much brand for your buck there, is there? No,
yeah.
That's true. All righty. Gee, look, time's getting away from us. Paul wanted to talk about fuel economy. Yes, Paul?
Yeah, hi, guys. I don't remember. I rang up a couple of months ago about me trying to get better fuel economy in my Nissan Navara camper van.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cat with tummy troubles, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Just by driving, as Toby suggested, to between 90 and 100 k's an hour, we went from sort of 15, 16 litres to 12 litres per 100 kilometres. So, 25%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing the difference speed can make to fuel economy, especially if you've got a car that's not very aerodynamic. And once you're talking about caravans and motorhomes and all this sort of stuff, most of them are pretty big boxy things that have, a lot of frontal area and also not a particularly smooth area for the air to flow over. So, you knock a little bit off and it can make a massive difference. So, good stuff. You're saving some money.
It works.
Yeah, that's right. I'm 25%.
Yeah, good on you.
Yeah, wow.
And the cat's tummy is much better now. So
good.
No more caramel custard.
Paul, come on, Paul. We've got imaginations, Paul. I mean, thank you, mate. 1-300-800-222. Tim makes a good point with very expensive cars. He says, my son has an old Crown. Was clearly designed for the owner to be driven in the back seat. That's the thing. If you've got a roller, you don't drive it, do you? You get driven.
In Australia, you do. That's the weird thing. In China, for example, if you're wealthy in China and you can afford a car like that, absolutely you don't drive.
You sit in the back seat.
And in some cases, the owner won't even have a license.
Yeah.
But in Australia, no, the Rolls-Royce owners typically drive them. There will be exceptions to that, obviously, but in the top end of town in Australia, the people who own them tend to like driving them.
So they can get out and say, hello. All right, what have you been driving, Toby?
What have I been driving? I've been... I have been driving a Ford Ranger recently, actually. I've been in something old school, so trying to get behind the wheel of that.
Mm.
I've also been in an Alfa Romeo Junior, which is the new small SUV from Alfa. So it's a little three-cylinder hybrid system. So not exactly highly strung or as exciting in the engine department as some previous Alphas have been, but fairly economical and also pretty fun to drive and pretty good looking as well. They've done a pretty good job on the styling. So package all that together and it stacks up pretty well.
All good fun. Toby, terrific. Time has beaten us. We've got a news bulletin coming, but we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great.
Good on you. Thanks. Toby Hagen and Motor Talk. Thanks to all the callers and texters. Sorry we couldn't get to everyone. Thank you, Joe from Long Worry. Dennis, John and Narelle, apologies about not being able to get to your calls, but we will do that again in a couple of weeks.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.